All right, take your Bible this evening and open to the book of Obadiah. One, two, three, go. While you're turning there, I think I probably have a little bit of time. You might catch that in a minute once you find Obadiah. Of course, obviously, it's hard to believe, but just in about a month, we also have our Easter service coming up as well. And of course, after the Easter service, we do have an egg hunt for the kids. And so if you'd like to help bring in some candy for the kids for that, we'll have a place you can start bringing it in the fellowship hall there. But you can keep that in mind as well. All right. How many of you found Obadiah yet? Find it? Some of you still looking? Somebody still looking? All right. I guess I better find it too, huh? There we go. All right. Obadiah. Still hear a few pages rustling. Anybody need a paper? Everybody got one? Anybody not get one of the handouts? All right. Great. Good job, guys. Great job. All right. So a couple things here. We'll do a couple fun things on the book of Obadiah. Everybody found it? It's a short one, isn't it? If you have a Bible, it could just be one page. Might be front and back, but it's a short one. All right, here's a quick question for you. Just for fun, how many different Obadiahs are mentioned in the Old Testament? Anybody have a clue? How many different Obadiahs? A lot of times we read about maybe a person named Obadiah and we read about him in another book, and a lot of times we think it's just the same Obadiah, right? Because only one person in the world was named Obadiah. So there's actually 12 different Obadiahs in the Old Testament. 12 different Obadiahs. So when you're reading through and you read about Obadiah, make sure you get the right one because there's 12 of them, all right? Anybody want to take a guess at what the shortest book of the Old Testament is? Brady? It's Obadiah. Good job, man. Good job. That's right. Obadiah is the shortest book in the Old Testament. It only has 21 verses. Anybody want to guess over out of the whole Bible where Obadiah places as the shortest? Obviously, we know it's the shortest in the Old Testament, but where would we think about in the whole Bible, over the whole Bible? Jude? Well, I mean, what do you think? Where does it place? First, second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, where like that. What do you think? Asher? No. No, it's first in the Old Testament. First in the Old Testament. Caleb? You're close. It's fourth. It's the fourth shortest book in the entire Bible, right? All right, so Obadiah deals with a people, not Jews. Doesn't deal with the Jewish people. Obadiah is a book dealing with a people called the Edomites or Edom, right? So the Edomites, anybody want to guess? They were the descendants of who? Who are the Edomites the descendants of? And if you say Edom, you're wrong, okay? Yes, ma'am. They were the descendants of Esau. That's correct. They were the descendants of Esau. Everybody remember Jacob and Esau, right? Jacob and Esau. And of course, through Jacob, we have Israel, but through Esau was the Edomites, okay? What bird, anybody, what bird is mentioned in the book of Obadiah? What bird is mentioned in the book of Obadiah? Brian? Nope, it's not a raven. Yes, ma'am, my wife? An eagle, that's right. So Obadiah must be a patriot, right? You know, there's an eagle, right? It's an eagle is mentioned in the book of Obadiah. Anybody know where Edom is located? Where is Edom located, right? We're going to be talking about Edom. We're going to be talking about the Edomites. Where is Edom even located? Where is Edom? What's that? Verse 8? No, where is it located? Like on a map. Where is it located? Levi? I'm glad you're looking at your paper. That's right. Southeast of Judah, right? So Edom. And I have a map here. If we could pull up the map of where Edom's at. So again, there's different maps show different things. So you see, obviously, kind of where Israel is. Edom was mostly east of the Jordan River. I know this is showing a little bit west of the Jordan River as well, but Edom was mostly west of the Jordan River, yay? In that area just southeast of Judah. And again, yes, as your paper says, it was in an area called Mount Seir. And so we're going to get into that. But at least you know where Edom was. Again, you're going to see there's where Israel was. And of course, remember the kingdoms are divided. So you've got the northern kingdom. This is more of a more modern looking map. It shows the West Bank, Gaza, things like that. But Edom would have been southeast of Israel there on the east side of the Jordan River, right? So Obadiah, only 21 verses, and it's one of the few books of the Bible that is not addressed to Judah or Israel. It's not addressed to either one of those. As we see in verse number one, it says, "The vision of Obadiah, thus saith the Lord concerning Edom." Concerning Edom. This book is in reference. God is giving Obadiah a vision. He's giving him a message to preach against Edom. Now, very little is known of Obadiah. The name Obadiah simply means a worshiper of the Lord or servant of the Lord. That's what the name Obadiah means. But really nothing else is known of him. Right? Some of them we know, like Amos, we know he was a herdsman. Some of the other ones we know different occupations, but nothing is known about Obadiah, which really I would say kind of keeps the focus of on the message rather than the messenger. But he is known, he is referred to as the prophet of poetic justice. The prophet of poetic justice. And you'll see what we mean by that in just a moment. It is the shortest of the Old Testament books, and it deals with the people of Edom, or again, the Edomites, okay, who were descendants of Esau. So when we go back to the book of Genesis, you remember Isaac had twin boys, Jacob and Esau, and of course, we'll talk about the history between those two, but the Edomites are the descendants of Esau, and the capital city of Edom was a place called Selah, or also what we know today as Petra. Anybody ever heard of Petra before? We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment as well. But it was considered an impregnable fortress. Okay, in fact, it was built within the rocks of a canyon in the mountains of Seir. And so, if you guys can pull that picture up of Petra there for me, this is what it looks like even today. They built these in the rocks, and they thought they were. I mean, look how those are people at the bottom. I mean, this was a massive undertaking that the Edomites did in building these fortresses in the rocks. And again, you can go and you can, well, if you want to go to Jordan. But if you go to Jordan, I wouldn't suggest that currently with the situation going on. But you can go to Jordan, you can go to Petra, and you can see these places that are still there that were built by the Edomites thousands of years ago. And we're going to see why, just keep this in mind, and we'll see some of the attitude of the Edomites as we go on, all right? Now, let me give you a little bit of a historical setting of Edom, right, and Obadiah. So Esau and Jacob, again, the twin brothers were basically, we could say, they were competitors before they were even born, right? They were competing even in the womb, right? And you can go back to Genesis chapter 25 with me real quick. Genesis chapter 25. And Genesis chapter 25, notice in verse number 19, says, "These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. The Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah's wife conceived, and the children struggled together within her." She said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. So again, think about this. So this is before they're even born, right? And God's already saying that the younger, of course, we know the younger is going to be Jacob. The elder is going to be Esau. So the elder is going to serve the younger. So God is already showing us that the nation that's going to come from Esau, the nation that's going to come from Jacob, Israel, and Edom, and he says that the older shall serve the younger, right? And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, right? So we have, this is the beginning, we could say, of the nations of Israel and the nation of the Edomites, of Esau. Now, unfortunately, I think many of you know the history here. Their parents, unfortunately, began showing favoritism with the twins, right? Isaac was very partial to Esau because Esau was a hunter, and Rebekah began showing favoritism to Jacob, and of course that began strife among the family again. I would say it's very important for parents, be careful about showing favoritism to your children, because again, they can start pitting that against each other and pitting parents against each other, as we see here. And of course, we know it didn't turn out well. But God had chosen Jacob, the younger son, to receive the blessing that was attached to the Abrahamic covenant. Of course, it was given to Abraham and then to Isaac, and God was going to give it to Jacob. But Jacob and Rebekah decided to get the blessing by scheming instead of trusting God. And of course, we know that Jacob deceived Esau twice. Well, really, it was really twice, because when his brother came from hunting and he's really hungry, and Jacob had some food prepared, and Esau says, hey, give me that food. And like a good brother, Jacob says, what you got? You know, and so of course, at this point, he sells the birthright, and then of course later on, deceives in getting the blessing as well. So things weren't going well in the family. You know, they just weren't going well. In fact, it got to the point where Esau decided he wanted to kill his brother. Not good. Okay. And of course, this caused Jacob to end up having to leave because of this. And of course, Jacob goes back to Haran. And this is, of course, where he finds his wife. And of course, we know years later, the two brothers experienced a brief time of reconciliation. They were both even at their father's burial. But the animosity was really never removed from between them. There was always strife. There was always that contention. And so Esau establishes the nation of Edom, and his descendants carried on that family feud that Esau had begun years before. But what's interesting is when we look at Scripture, so go with me to the book of Deuteronomy now, right? The book of Deuteronomy. So again, this is just kind of laying some foundation here so you understand what's going to be taking place here. But in Deuteronomy chapter 23, by the time we come to Deuteronomy, Israel is already a nation, right? We understand they have been in Egypt for 400 years. Moses has delivered them, brought them out. They're getting ready to enter into the promised land, so they are a nation. Edom at this point is also a nation. And we're going to talk a little bit about some things that they did when Israel was coming out of Egypt. But notice, even though there's this animosity and really, it's really kind of one-sided. Just as Esau hated his brother Jacob, we find the Edomites hating Israel. But I want you to notice what God tells the Israelites about Edom. Look in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse number 7. Thou shalt not abhor an Edomite, for he is thy brother. God says, you're not to abhor, you're not to look down upon them, you're not to treat them badly. They are your kin, he says. They're your brother. This is the brother of Isaac or of Jacob. And so God gives specific instructions here as he gave the laws that, hey, the Edomites, they're your kin, right? So you're not to abhor these Edomites. So the law of Moses commanded the Jews to treat the Edomites like brothers, and they were not to abhor them, right? Now, when we think about when the book of Edom, or the book of Edom, well, I guess it could be the book of Edom because that's the only one mentioned about, or the only one that's really specifically towards Edom. But the book of Obadiah, there are two views of the date of the writing, because Obadiah talks about judgment upon Edom for how Edom treats Israel, okay? It's a book of judgment. It's, again, Obadiah is the prophet of poetic justice, right? And of course, I think we all understand the saying, you reap what you sow, right? And that's what Obadiah's book is all about, dealing with the Edomites. You are going to reap what you have sown, okay? But there's two views of when the book of Obadiah was written. One, now again, you have to remember, this is, the years I'm going to be talking about are B.C., okay? So B.C., before Christ, right? B.C., before all of that, right? So there's one view that the book of Obadiah was written around 590 B.C., which would have been a few years before the fall of Jerusalem to Babylon, right? When Jerusalem is finally, Israel or Judah falls, Babylon comes in and takes Judah into captivity. And Obadiah uses past tense, though, in many of these verses to describe what Edom had already done. So I believe, this is my personal opinion. Again, there are two views on this. If you disagree with me, that's totally fine. I don't have a problem with that. But just as I was studying it, as I was trying to research this, Obadiah uses this past tense to describe what Edom has already done. So I don't believe it could have been written before the fall of Jerusalem because it hasn't fallen yet. Okay. The other view is that it was written around 890 BC. So again, remember, so this is, we're talking, here's the cross here. 590 is when Judah would have fallen in the destruction of Jerusalem. So 890 would have been even before that, okay? Again, you've got to remember we're going backwards in time here, right? So 890 BC, because again, if you think about it, there is no king that is mentioned. It's written about Edom. It's not written about Israel. Nor is it written about Judah. So it is hard to put a date on when it was written. But the clues we have that it has something to do with Edom acting violently toward Judah. Look in verse number 10. He says, "For thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger. Neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress." So God specifically talks about a time when enemies came against Judah and Edom stood by, watched what they did, even came to the point when they saw people escaping this destruction. They called them out and said, "Hey, they're over here. Yeah, the children of Israel over here, they're here, go, come get them." And even, he says, even helped in the destruction of Judah. Now again, remember, God said, "Hey, Israel, you don't abhor the Edomites. You treat them like a brother." But did Edom reciprocate that? No, they did not. Edom did not reciprocate that at all, right? So it has to do with this this time period of when Edom is very violent toward Judah, toward Jerusalem. And again, we don't have time to look all up all these passages, but you can go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 28 and also Joel chapter 3, where it mentions what Edom did. And again, which happened before the fall, right? Because in 2 Kings chapter 8, also in 2 Chronicles chapter 1, it talks about how Edom came in and helped to destroy and helped to fight against Judah and fight against God's people. It's interesting, in Psalms 83, it presents Edom in league with the Ishmaelites, the Moabites, the Amalekites, the Philistines, the Assyrians, and others against God's people. So it includes them with these people as going against God's people. Now, what's interesting in Psalms 83 is the inclusion of the Assyrians. Because if it was during the fall of Jerusalem and Judah, when they're taken into captivity, the Assyrians are nobody at this point. It's the Babylonians who are in charge, right? But Psalms 83 includes the Assyrians with what is happening. And so, again, I believe it favors a pre-exile date. In fact, even Amos, in Amos chapter 1 and verse number 6, it says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Gaza and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they carried away captive the whole captivity to deliver them up to Edom." So the Philistines, they carried into captivity a whole people of Judah, and they were even delivering them as captives to Edom. Of course, then this would certainly be what Obadiah means when he says in verse number 11 that they stood by when strangers did this to Judah, right? Also in Amos chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, it says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Edom and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. But I will send a fire upon Teman, which shall devour the palaces of Bozrah." So again, this is why we're trying to put these books in kind of a chronological order of the events taking place, okay? So this is I believe the book of Obadiah is being written, again, during the time of 2 Kings, when you read in the book of 2 Kings, right? Last week, we were looking at, and I just forgot. What did we look at last week? Who did Joel? You did Joel. When my dad did Joel, going through in that time period of 2 Kings, okay? And so there's going to be numerous prophets that we look at during that time period, okay? So again, God is bringing judgment. So the placement of Obadiah, even where it is in Scripture, is with the pre-exile prophets, with Amos, Hosea, Joel, Obadiah, right? These are the pre-exile prophets, okay? Before they were taken into captivity. So I believe that Obadiah was written around 900 BC, okay? You say, well, what difference does that make? Well, again, where we're placing it, how it's talking about what God's judgment is going to be. And I think it is important here as we'll go through this. Now, what's interesting is there are more prophecies directed against Edom in Scripture than any other nation. More prophecies against a country and a people group that most of us have never even heard of than any other nation in Scripture. Their hostility to Israel. You can go back in Numbers chapter 20 when they were coming out. Just really quick, go back with me in the book of Numbers, right? Again, because this is all going through dealing with Edom. Numbers chapter 20. Notice in verse number 14, Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. Thus saith thy brother Israel. So it's always interesting how God uses that term, brother right? The Edomites are the brothers. The Israel is the brother. Thus saith thy brother Israel, thou knowest all the travail that had befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt. We have dwelt in Egypt a long time. The Egyptians vexed us and our fathers, right? And he goes on, verse number 17, let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards, neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We'll not turn to the right hand or to the left until we have passed through. And Edom said unto him, thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. They just said, we just want to pass through. They said, no, you don't. You touch our land and we're going to come out and we're going to fight you. There's hostility here. And the children of Israel said, we will go by the highway. And if I and my cattle drink of thy water, I will pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. So there is animosity, a huge amount of animosity and hostility that the Edomites have towards Israel. And yet you see God continuing to show mercy to them. Again, Deuteronomy chapter 23, 2 Chronicles chapter 20. God says, they're your brothers. Don't abhor them, right? And so even though Edom stood by and even participated when Jerusalem was attacked and destroyed and all of that, God says, hey, you don't get even, right? God says, I'll do that, okay? Now, again, the overview of the book and the theme is really the pride of Edom. Look in verse number 3. The pride of thine heart hath deceived thee, thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rocks, whose habitation is high, that said in his own heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Again, think about it. Remember that picture of Petra that we saw? They said, you can't touch us. Nobody can touch us. We're untouchable. We're invincible. And God said, it's your pride that's going to bring you down. Your pride is going to bring you down. And of course, when we think about the overview here, we see pride goeth before destruction. Isn't that what Proverbs says? Pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall, right? We get so full of self. We get so full of pride. Look, hey, nobody can touch me. God says, you know, it's really not the attitude you should have. It's really not the way you should go, right? And of course, again, you will reap what you sow. Look in verse number 9. And thy mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed to the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter. Why? For thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. By the way, do you know today there is no Edomites? Edom is gone. They're destroyed, just like God said. Why? You reap what you sow. You will reap what you sow. Now, if you look at the purpose of the writing of the book of Obadiah, he is announcing God's judgment on Edom for its pride, their violence, and the betrayal of Judah. At the same time, though, Obadiah is also affirming God's ultimate justice and restoration for his people, okay? Edom is a picture of the natural man. And what we would say, the self-life, it's all about me. It's all about me. And you can see the parallels of that life of a carnal man as you read through. Hey, thy pride, it's all about me, right? It's all about me. Now, there's the themes here. There are five major themes that I've written down here. Again, number one, pride leads to destruction or downfall. That's what we see with Edom. I believe God, if Edom would have followed God and would have listened to what God said, I believe Edom would still be around today and God would have blessed them. But instead they said, we don't need God. We don't need God. By the way, remember Jacob had two sons, Isaac and Esau. Guess what? They both learned the same things at home. They learned about who God was, right? And one chose to say, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to do my own thing, right? And so we see this parallel of the self man, okay? Number two, we see God defends his covenant people. We're going to see that here. Number three, accountability for indifference and cruelty. Again, God says, you're going to give an account for what you do. The words that we say, the actions that we do, God says we're going to give account for. We see that in Obadiah. We see divine justice and ultimate restoration, and then the certainty of God's kingdom. And again, think about this. Notice in verse number 15, for the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. Where have we seen that phrase, the day of the Lord, before? I think when Dr. Brian went through the book of Joel, we saw that phrase several times, the day of the Lord, the day of the Lord, the day of the Lord. It's coming, is near upon all the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. What would we say? Very simply, you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow, right? But then when we come to the end here, when we go to verse number 17, he says, but upon Mount Zion shall be, what's that next word? Deliverance. Isn't that awesome? Upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness. I wonder maybe who Obadiah might be referring to there. And the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions, and the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord hath spoken it. You notice several times here, God says, it's gonna be over for you. It's gonna be over. You're gonna be wiped out. And they of the south shall possess the mound of Esau, and they of the plain, the Philistines, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim and the fields of Samaria, and Benjamin shall possess Gilead. And the captivity of his host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even unto Zarephath, and the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Sepharad, shall possess the city of the south. And saviors shall come upon the Mount Zion to judge the mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. Now, we could look at the book of Obadiah and we could say, well, you know, it's not even really about Judah, although it's God pronouncing judgment upon Judah. It's not really about Israel. It's about this nation of Edom that really isn't even in existence today. So what does this have to do with me? What does this have to do with us? Why do we need to read and study the book of Obadiah? Well, again, if we think about it, we look at the structure of the book, it is judgment against Edom. Edom's pride is exposed. And by the way, when we think we're too prideful that we don't need God, God's gonna expose that. And so often we live like we don't need God. And God says, you better be careful. You better be careful, right? Can I say, our nation better be careful. We are coming to the point in our nation, we're saying we don't need God. And you look at many other nations in the past that God has blessed and God's hand was upon, and they turned on God and said, hey, we don't need you anymore. And guess what happened? God took his hand off of those nations and they're nothing like they were before. And we're heading down that same road, friend. We're heading down that same road if we're not careful. And by the way, the ones that, can I say, the ones that are kind of leading that charge is not really the world. It's Christians. It's Christians, the one that's saying, we don't need God. You know, we go to church on Sunday and we have a Bible and you know, we're just gonna do our thing. We don't really need God. You know, I've got my plans. I've got my ideas. I've got my future. This is what I'm gonna do. And so God, either you get on board or you get out. That's most Christians today. God, you get on my plans. You get on what I wanna do or I don't need you. Now, you do what I want. All right, God, I'll follow you. What? I'll love you. No, that's not it. You don't get to tell God what to do. God is the one that tells us what to do, right? And if we're not careful, our pride, we can think, oh, we're such a great nation. Oh, we've got such a great military. Oh, we've got the Bible. Oh, we've got churches all around. We have freedom. Can I tell you something? It can all change just like that. All God has to do is say, all right, you're on your own. And Frank, can I tell you something? It's not gonna be good. And that's why it's so important for Christians to follow God. That's why we talked about this morning. It's so important for Christians to live a holy life for God, for this world to see. Because if not, he says, the pride of thine heart hath deceived thee. What happened? They trusted their natural defenses. They trusted their alliances. And they said, we don't need God. We look at our possessions. We look at our job security. We look at our finances. We look at our cars. We look at all these things. We think, hey, I've got it set. I've got it made. I don't need God. That's exactly what Edom did. And God declared that their security, their safety would not save them. And then of course we see the second area here of the structure. We see reasons for judgment, as we've already read through. They did not care about Judah. They were encouraging the destruction of Judah. They were participating in it many times and just helping and not concerned about it. They basically betrayed their kin. They betrayed, in God's eyes, they betrayed their brother, Esau, betrayed Israel, betrayed Jacob, betrayed Judah. And yet we see the last part, the final reward, not for Edom, but for Judah, is the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord is near in two areas, both for judgment on Edom. And again, he says that several times. There's going to be judgment upon Edom, but also for restoration for Judah, for the kingdom of Israel. And that's why he says in verse number 21, he says that, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. Israel is going to be restored. And we know, according to scripture, there's coming a day when Jesus Christ is going to return and he's going to set his feet on this earth again. And he's going to set up his kingdom. And just as we saw in verse number 17, upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance and there shall be holiness. And so again, as we think about this, Obadiah's warning against pride, self-reliance, not needing God. And so it's a challenge to us to respond rightly, to acknowledge who God is, even to respond rightly to the suffering of others. When we see others suffering, we should not just rejoice and be happy and participate in it, but we should do what we can to help meet their suffering and to share Christ with them. Because God does see that injustice. Remember in the Gospels, Jesus said, if you give someone a cup of water in my name, I see that. I see that. If you just give them a cup of water in my name, Jesus says, you'll be rewarded for that. Everything that we do, God says we will give an account for, right? And then, of course, it points forward to the ultimate reign of God's kingdom. And so when we think about Obadiah, we need to be very careful about pride. Be very careful about pride in our heart, that we don't just think, hey, we don't need God.